Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hello and welcome to Made by Mamas, the podcast. I'm Zoe.
And I'm Georgia.
And we're here talking all things parenthood, tips and tricks,
products we love,
and brands that we can't live without. Let's get into it.
Hello. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm really good. What day is it?
We're actually recording this on a Monday, so
happy Monday.
Happy Monday. You guys are going to hear this tomorrow morning or at midnight. Some people listen to this at midnight, don't they?
I love that. I just have these visions of people kind of sitting up feeding their little ones and listening to the podcast, or the insomniacs like me that just, you know, either are online shopping or listening to podcasts at 2 a.m. How was your weekend?
Do you know what? It was Saturday. Well, I basically solo parented all weekend. Because James was out, his football season finished on Saturday, so he was out all day Sunday. So I took the kids to my mum's because I couldn't face another day on my own with them. Because Saturday I was on my own again, and it was fine. Like, we just did normal things. Like, we went out for lunch, I took them to the pound shop, took them in some charity shops.
Great.
And then took them to Waitrose. I mean, it's really not very fun for them, but it kind of is. Like, Axel was quite excited to go into a charity shop, and I was explaining the concept to him and stuff, but it's exhausting. I think that's the thing. By the time we got into the supermarket, Gigi needed a nap. She was literally throwing herself on the floor screaming, and you know, you're like, I just don't know what to do.
Is that in Waitrose as well?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I know. Yeah. Flipping Waitrose.
Someone
caught
that.
The worst one.
Yeah. The worst one with all the judginess going on.
All the bloody judgy Jameses in there. And I was just like, oh my God, I just don't know what to do. And I did actually at one point just close my eyes and just pretend I wasn't there. Like, I'm just going to close my eyes and just pretend this isn't happening. But I mean, yeah, it was fine. Anyway, so this morning I had a lovely facial to relax from a hellish weekend.
You can say
and now
how
I feel brand new.
You can
now
say it how it new. Is. Listen, there's nothing. Yeah. I mean, look, there's nothing fun about any of that that you've just described. Let's break it down. You know, Saturdays before kids were spent kind of mooching around the shops with friends, getting ready to go out, nice cocktail bars, drinking champagne. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Like, really fun stuff. And now it's dealing with toddler tantrums in the frozen food section of Waitrose. Not fun.
No, it's not. Tell me you had a better weekend than me.
Well. I didn't have as good a time as Dozer had, because Dozer went on like a stag do, and there wasn't even anyone getting married. He went to the Isle of Wight for lunch on Friday with a group of his friends, and they basically got on a boat. It was like a rib, and they went across to the Isle of Wight. Everything was outside, had a really lovely lunch. It's like a booze cruise, basically, I'd say.
Wow.
He got back at 4 o'clock in the morning, just before my alarm went off for work.
Oh,
he staggered in, and I was like, oh God, you are drunkity drunk. I was like, here's some paracetamol, you get into bed, here's some water. And then there was me just getting myself ready for work. So basically, I've sort of been nursing a small hungover child all weekend.
Small? That is one word I would not use to describe Dozer.
So true. He's ginormous. A ginormous child.
Yeah.
We hung out with some friends in Richmond Park yesterday, just having a look at the deers. And I ended up drinking nearly a whole bottle of rosé to myself. And when I stood up, I was like, fuck.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty drunk here. But it was really fun.
Yeah. Oh, that's, well, so you did have a better weekend
than
me.
I did.
So that's good.
I did.
My time next weekend.
Yes. Oh, it's our time. We need to go out. We've got to plan this as well. In fact, you know what? I feel like as soon as the rules and regs change, we're just going to do an impromptu Made by Mama's night out. So anybody that listens to the podcast will tell you which bar we're going to be at and you can come and join us for a wild night out.
Yeah, we will. Yes. Nothing formal. No. It'll just be us.
Yeah, just shits and giggles.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, George, I guess we need to, before we just natter on for the rest of the eternity, we need to kind of get on with the chat, which we recorded earlier on today.
Yes, we did. We've been trying to get this guest on for a while. And actually, in a weird twist of fate, I'm glad we waited because she is currently pregnant. I think she's around, was it 17 weeks pregnant? Yes. At the moment. And if we'd have chatted to her a few months ago, obviously she wouldn't have been able to share that news with us. So we managed to chat about that. We chatted about her fertility issues. We chatted about periods. It seems to be a topic that we're talking about so much at the moment, having not spoken about them to now. I'm glad we're talking about them because I'm learning something new every week.
Yeah, exactly. The topic of periods kind of keeps coming up. I think it must be sort of really prominent in people's minds at the moment, and people are asking more questions and figuring out stuff about their own cycle and talking about, you know, their own kind of period history over the last 15, 20 years, whatever it is. So yeah, it was a fascinating chat, and she actually gave us a real insight into what's been going on in her world that I didn't know about with her periods over the last two and a half years. So it's a really fantastic chat. Who are we talking to today, G?
Today we are chatting to the lovely Izzy Judd.
I feel like this chat's going to be absolutely wonderful because we're all IT freaks, as in we don't know how to work anything related to tech. But that means we're all like-minded women, so that's great. Today, joining us on the podcast, mother, author, speaker. She's really, really, really good at the violin. Makes me quite jealous when I listen and see her play. Mindfulness teacher, all-round complete legends. Please welcome Izzy Judd to the podcast. Hello.
Thank you. What a lovely intro. So nice to see you, girls.
It's so nice to see you. I should have also said, pregnant. Congratulations.
Yes. Thank you. How are you feeling?
Yeah, I'm doing much, much better. Had a rough few weeks. Harry and I, we got COVID, which was just felt really, really unlucky as the cases were dropping. And I was just being so careful. You know, so it was just, so that was just awful. Yeah. And then I've had urine infections. It's just been one thing after another. But I feel like now we are on the up. So, and it's nice as well to be able to tell people, because it's always that difficult thing, isn't it, within the first 12 weeks. I really, because I've talked a lot about fertility and I really ummed and ahed about whether I was going to share the news sooner. Because I think there's a lot of pressure on women in the first 12 weeks and in the first trimester to, you feel so awful and you can't tell anybody.
Yeah.
But equally, I have suffered a miscarriage in the past, so you are conscious of that it's a vulnerable time. But equally, it's also nice to have the support from people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Were you not sharing because you were feeling anxious about what's happened in the past with the miscarriage? Were you kind of maybe holding it a little bit tighter because you didn't want to jinx it?
Yeah, I think so. And also Lola's 5 now. She understands a lot more. And I wanted to wait until a safer zone, before we told the children. So that was another reason. And I kind of felt like they deserved to know before we shared the news elsewhere. So, but I did really think about it, because I do think it's incredibly tough for women when, especially if you have experienced loss, to then have to then hold it in again for those early weeks. And obviously it's completely personal as to what you feel comfortable with. But equally, there shouldn't really be a pressure to either way. If you want to share the news, you should feel able to. And if you,
Zara and I always say that we feel like we would share the news early with people we would tell if we suffered a loss. So a couple of close people, so that if anything did happen, we would be telling those people anyway. But, you know, neither of us have been through it. So it's easy for us to say that, isn't it? Do you think when you have suffered a loss and fertility issues, it puts more pressure on who you tell?
Yeah, none of my pregnancies since loss have I really been able to relax or feel that sort of elated joy. Or if I do, it's very short-lived. And then, you know, you're on tender hooks the whole time. You feel so vulnerable. But then I also feel quite passionately about being open and talking about it, because it is so common. So for me personally, you know, I think, like you were saying, I tend to tell the people close to me that I would want to have their support should anything happen. And equally, you know, I also want to try and think positively, and, you know, so yeah, it's a difficult one. I think for Harry and I think we feel that, you know, having gone through such a struggle and having gone through IVF, we would have loved that moment to kind of be able to say to our families as a surprise, oh, you know, we're pregnant. But because everybody's, you know, been so involved, that's just not the way it's ever been.
Can we ask you about your pregnancies, and can we kind of take you back to Lola and you know, around that time when you were trying to conceive, and kind of talk me through with Kit and then obviously with the new baby?
Mm. Yeah. So typically with our first, we got married. It was Christmas time. And I was sort of at Harry. I was like, come on then, let's have children. And he was like, let's wait. And I was like, but we've been together, like, you know, how many years? What are we waiting for? So anyway, when we did finally start trying, my period didn't start the first month, you know, and we had this moment of like being in the bathroom and me doing the pregnancy test and just thinking, yeah, we've done it. And it was negative. And I did a few more and it was negative. And then my periods just didn't start, and that had never ever happened to me before. And so I really panicked and went straight to a gynecologist to get some tests and find out what was going on. And I was diagnosed with polycystic ovaries. And so basically I wasn't ovulating, but I believe now that my diagnosis, I'm not sure it really told the full story. And I think I understand that better now, having gone through a longer fertility journey. So after Harry and I went down the sort of medical route, I suppose, quite quickly when my periods didn't start, I had a lot of intervention hormonally, a lot of synthetic hormones to try and get me to ovulate. And I was taking Clomid and I resisted absolutely everything. So even when I did an IUI, which is where they time the moment in your cycle to inject the sperm, the medication to try and get me to produce the eggs, still my body wasn't responding. And so I just felt this sense of huge failure. Nothing was working. I just assumed it was going to be so easy, and everyone around me was falling pregnant. And, you know, it's just the most soul destroying thing, and lack of confidence and fear of the future. You know, not knowing whether we would ever be a fam, you know, have children. And then we did go on to have IVF, and we miscarried after the first. And then the second, which was a frozen embryo, was Lola, which just blows my mind still that she was frozen and then defrosted. And and then very, very quickly after Lola, so under a year, we then conceived Kit naturally. We'd always said, we'll just see what happens.
Yeah.
Do they understand how that happens? If you've gone through IVF and then you fall pregnant naturally, is that because the body knows how to be pregnant?
I think my personal experience with that was that the issue we had was for me to release the eggs. So it was for me to ovulate.
Yeah.
And so probably I stopped breastfeeding Lola And probably my cycles just naturally, there was no time. I obviously just caught a moment because I knew, I said to Harry, I've got a period, I've got a cycle. And you know, I started to learn a lot about the inner workings of our monthly cycles and what to look for. And I just knew, and we'd always said, look, let's just see what happens. And so very quickly Kit was conceived. And I was also with that, always had this sort of emotional tie because we had one other frozen embryo from our first round of IVF. And literally it was a bit of an eeny, meeny, miny, mo for Lola. They could have picked the other embryo and, you know, what if I had never met Lola and who is that person in there? And
do you think, you know, when you fell pregnant with Kit, obviously, was it a huge shock? Because had you all kind of in your head thought, I will use the, you know, the other frozen embryo?
Total shock. And I remember sort of, it was, and also it was such a romantic, you know, all the things, when you're trying for a baby and you hear all these stories and it's never you, you know, and then all of a sudden Lola was with me in the bathroom. I did the pregnancy test. It was New Year's Day and the line came up. And it was just, and I was just going to Lola, there's a line, bless her, she didn't know what I was talking about. And then I kind of woke Harry up and showed him, and it was like, is this a joke? Because, you know, we'd gone through so much, and then it just seemed so straightforward. And I was right in the middle of writing Dare to Dream, which was kind of my fertility story of Lola. And I remember thinking, I was quite worried about how I was going to share this news and be open, because it just seems so easy in comparison, but actually it gave loads of people hope and loads of people the feeling that actually it can happen, it is possible.
And
so you're pregnant with Kit, you have your little boy, and then talk me through what's going on over the next couple of years. Are you having conversations with Harry about a third?
No, done. After we had, well, so I never threw any baby stuff away. I never could quite get to that moment. And I was keeping everything in the loft. And we would have sort of random conversations. And I had this frozen embryo from our round of IVF kind of in the back of my mind. And who are you? And, you know, do I want to go back? But to be really brutally honest, Kit was such a challenging little boy. I love him with all my heart, but he and I took a long time to get to know each other. And
when
feel,
he was a baby, is he? When he was a baby?
Yeah, he just, well, he's just, I think it's really, really difficult. When you have them very close together, you've got a girl and a boy, and they're very different characters. They behave very differently. You know, I just sort of figured out a pattern with Lola, and it was all good. And then nothing worked with Kit. Like nothing I had used before was working for him. And I just was thrown. I was completely thrown. He was really needy. He had reflux. He was at my
same
feet.
Baby.
He would just whinge at me like 24/7. And I was, and you know, you also have that whole guilt because you feel so obviously so lucky to, I felt so lucky to have given Lola a sibling. But equally, I was like, does anybody take him? I cannot. He is demanding so much from me. And I, because I fell pregnant so quickly, I didn't take enough time off work, which I should have done. And it was just, to be honest with you, a really, really stressful period. And I feel quite sad that I didn't have that time with Kit like I had with Lola.
Yeah.
Because I was just being I felt so challenged.
Yeah.
So it's taken me this long to prepare myself to have another baby, really.
Yeah, George, go on. I want to find out how it happened.
No, I was just going to say, first of all, I was going to say there's obviously something in the name Kit, because that sounds like your little Kit. So he was the same, wasn't he, when he was born?
Yeah.
But also you mentioned the guilt, and I think that's, something that obviously all of us mums, we feel guilty all the time about everything. But do you think because you'd had, you know, all the fertility struggles before, you felt like you needed to be lapping up every single moment because you were so lucky to be in this position? And how could you, how could you say to anyone you weren't enjoying it when you wanted it so badly?
Yeah, it's really hard to know because I didn't know any other way. So I don't know whether I would have just, I think instinctively as mums, we feel guilty. I mean, my mum says it never goes, it never leaves you, constantly. But I do think I definitely felt it wasn't as, motherhood at the beginning was not as I expected it to be. And there were a lot of things with the breastfeeding and all sorts of things that I just wasn't prepared for or knew about. You know, I was learning at the same time. And so I think, you know, when I then had Kit, Lola was actually very easy, but I struggled. You know, I was the one that kind of, she would
first
settle
time
at night,
mom.
Whereas with Kit, he can drive me to rage as quickly as he can drive me to just insane love. Like the love he gives and the kisses and he's just such a loving, cuddly boy. But he's just also equally demanding. So I think I had different challenges with each of them for different reasons. And I don't know whether that would have been any different, whether I'd had fertility treatment or not.
We'll be right back after the short break.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
So welcome back to this episode of Made by Mamas. Where were we? How was your mental health during that period? So you had two under two?
Yeah, two under two.
Snap.
Yeah.
What was going on mentally and how were you coping? Yeah. You said you were struggling in areas, but overall, was Harry there to support and were you guys working as a team? Were you communicating those feelings to him?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, Harry's an amazing dad and we've always been complete co-parents. I mean, the nature of our work has allowed us to be like that because Harry's, you know, we have periods of time where he's always around, which is also challenging. and then obviously he's always, you know, I've always been able to leave the house and not have to say to Harry, oh, do this, do that. He's kind of, he knows what the agenda is and he gets on. Although he's very good at coming through the door after a day of work and being like, okay, I'm just going to go and put my feet up. Whereas I come through the door and I'm straight back into mum, right? Whereas they're like, I need a moment. Like,
yeah. I need the transition.
Whereas I walk through the door and he's like, there you go.
George sometimes says that James goes upstairs and has a shower.
Yeah, he does. He
before
does.
Because he starts husband, parenting again.
That's exactly what he does. And it drives me mad.
Yeah. They are, I don't know. I always say to Harriet, I think he just has his limits. He has his sort of time and then he needs his own time and that, you know, and we tick along and we've got to understand one another. But I think, I definitely, in looking back, I think it's easier, isn't it, when you're looking back. I think I was immensely stressed when Kit was born.
Yeah.
And those sort of that first year. And I've spoken about it really briefly, and it's something I want to talk and open up about more. But the way I was combating stress and anxiety, which I do all the time, is to just be a complete control freak.
Right.
Because then if I can control everything, then. And so a lot of it became around, I was basically over-exercising, under-eating, completely stressed, trying to hold on in any way I could. And as a result, I had no periods for 3 years, basically. My body just completely shut down. And I'm only now starting to feel strong enough to kind of open up about that and talk about it, because I felt really quite ashamed.
Well, firstly, don't feel ashamed at all. It's something that I can speak firsthand about as well, but it didn't happen after the kids. It happened before. And that was the over-exercising and the under-eating and, you know, stress and anxiety. And I didn't have a period for 5 years. But like you said, Izzy, I found it really difficult to talk about it at the time. In fact, I kept it fiercely private from everybody in my life. So I can, and I was almost, even though I feel like I'm quite a bright, you know, woman, I was almost kind of going, God, I mean, what's going on? Like, why am I not having periods? It's like, well, because my body fat was about 5% or something. And there's no way that I could have had a period during that period. But yeah, I'm starting to talk about that a lot more. It's got a name, hasn't it?
Well, yeah. So amazingly, I had this weird experience. It was a Sunday night, and I was chatting to Harry, and I was sort of saying, look, I don't know what to do. Like, I've written these books, I'm really passionate about these subjects. I felt close to burnout. Something was like, I'm doing it all, but is it making a difference? Or should I be with my children more? You know, that kind of that conversation was going on in my head. And the next morning I walked Kit to nursery, and I decided to go to a different coffee shop, which I always go to the same coffee shop on my route home. But this day I was like, I'm going to go and try that new one. So I went, and I got chatting. This girl came over to me and just said, oh, I've been listening to your fertility podcast. Thank you so much, you know, for talking about it. And anyway, we got chatting, and I said to her, I don't have any periods. And she said, yeah, I was exactly the same. I had hypothalamic amenorrhea. And as she was talking, I was like, oh God, there were just alarm bells going in my head. And she was like, read this book called No Period, Now What, by Nicola Rinaldi. And so I went straight towards Stones, got a copy, and it was like reading my head out loud. And it was kind of frightening, because I just hadn't realized the muddle that I'd actually got myself into. It was a moment of change. And had I not had that moment with this person, you know, I on September last year, I stopped all exercise, increased my food intake, and a month later my period started, and then I fell pregnant naturally.
That is incredible. My question is, that condition, is that a result? Because I imagine in my head that some people's periods can just stop. So we're not talking about over-exercising or under-eating. That condition maybe is associated with people's periods just stopping for another reason. Because for me, it makes sense that if you were under-eating and over-exercising, your periods would stop, because that's what happened to me. So do you know specifically if it was related to that, or did you have a sort of separate condition going on?
So I have absolutely no doubt in my mind, because I tried bioidentical hormones. So I went to see a consultant. This was before I read the book, because I needed to have a period for health reasons. I'm osteopenic. And just as a woman, you know, I was like, I feel dormant. I just want a period. Had no cycle. There was no kind of creativity peaks, and then rest peaks. You know, it was just like, I didn't know where I was. And so I went to see this consultant. Because my BMI was normal.
Right.
Yeah. There was no sort of, well, you're underweight. I didn't look underweight, and I was in denial. So he then put me on bioidentical hormones. And of course, again, I resisted. And then that's what I mean when I was going back to sort of my initial diagnosis, polycystic ovaries. in the book I read, you know, often it is misdiagnosed. And the issue is that I'm not, and obviously I'm no professional, I'm no medical professional, I'm just talking about my personal experience.
Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
I, in order to try and help the polycystic ovaries to ovulate, you look at your nutrition, you look at your weight, you look at, you know, because those are the things traditionally or stereotypically with polycystic ovaries are the issues. So actually, I think I was feeding the problem.
Yes.
Rather than treating what the actual, what my diagnosis actually was. And I think the hypothalamus, you know, basically it goes, right, what do you need today? You need to breathe. Those are the organs that need to work, not your reproductive organs.
Right.
That's not essential. And if you're stressed and anxious and everything else. So, you know, I feel it's taken a long journey, and it's something I'm going to talk about and share more, because I think it's probably more common than
do you know what?
We realize.
It's so interesting, because when you were saying about, you know, you were a completely normal weight and your BMI was fine, I remember I did, what's her name? Kayla Itinez. I did her program, right, I did her program when I was about 24. I was going on a girls' trip to Dubai or something. I was like, right, 12 weeks, I'm going to do this program. And my period stopped when I did that. And
really?
There was, you know, really? I was eating normally, but I was just doing this program. And I don't know, like you say, if my body was just so focused on doing this program every single day. And it wasn't like I'd never exercised before. I'd always been exercising. Yeah. It was just, I just switched what I was doing. I was HIIT training rather than maybe, I don't know, I used to do body pump or something. And it was like my body was like, right, I'm just going to focus all my energy onto this now, and I'm not going to give you a period. And weirdly, that was the time I was just got married, and we hadn't been talking about having children, but it was the time when I thought, oh, I haven't got any periods. Oh, okay, I'm really worried about this. And then I started taking like my cycles more seriously.
Yeah.
And wanting to have a period and not avoiding having a period and stuff like that. So
isn't it weird that we really don't know that much about our cycles? We discussed this on the podcast a couple of weeks back, but it's something that is so intrinsically linked to us inside and how we're feeling. And we should know the ins and outs of it, the back to fronts of it, but we don't. We're not taught period health at the crucial time when we're at school, nothing. And we take a contraceptive pill that the doctor just gives to us and don't get pregnant. And then we're taking that for 15 years. And who knows what our cycle's doing? Mm. I mean, it's madness. Yeah. I don't know now what, because I'm on HRT because I'm in early menopause. I'm having to take estrogen and then an estrogen progesterone pill. And I've got no idea when my periods are coming. They're loads heavier. I get chronic period pains now, back and front, which puts me out for a day. Really hormonal, crying a lot for like a week before. It's just hell, basically.
Yeah.
That bit is hell. I find it I just wish there was more information, I guess, or at least I wish we had more information growing up about it.
Yeah. And
how important our cycles are. And also for partners and people we're around to understand, you know, that this is the moment I'm in my cycle. And this is, you know, like usually at the beginning of your cycle, you get a surge of creativity and motivation, and then it slumps. And if we understood all those things a bit better, then it would help everybody around us, you know, and ourselves, of course.
Yeah. I never used to get any PMT before I had children, and now I get it really badly. But there's nothing that annoys me more than when James goes, oh, are you about to get your period? And I think, no! And then when I get it, I almost want to hide it because I don't want him to be right.
Totally.
Or they go, That makes sense then. Last couple of days, makes sense. And I'm like, that, give me the kitchen knife. Where is it?
You're still
right. you said that you fell pregnant naturally. So, I mean, obviously so over the moon that you're doing it, but just having sex and enjoying it, and then bang, we're pregnant.
Yeah, I think Bridgerton helped.
Bridgerton?
I think there'll be a Bridgerton baby boom. Yeah, so I spoke to my fertility clinic because obviously I wanted to talk to them about the one we had remaining. And their advice was that I tried naturally for 6 months. And I felt, because I had been on such a huge roller coaster the months before and actually had gone through a huge amount to get my periods back, I thought, let's give this a go. And I took their advice, you know, and I worried about how I would feel having not gone back for that one. But when I took the pregnancy test that morning, I'd like locked the door and Kit was like desperately trying to get in the bathroom. And I was trying to work out this. I've done so many pregnancy tests, but in the moment where you're like trying to figure
what
it all
I
out.
What do I do?
I know, what am I looking? But anyway, and it showed up and I went into, Lola and Kit were in Lola's room. And I just looked at Lola and I thought, do you know what? That period of my life will always have given me Lola. Like, yeah, whatever. And I'm just delighted to be pregnant, whichever way. And you're just, you know, so it was almost a slight relief about how I might feel getting a positive result and it not being. Does that make sense? Not being the embryo that, yeah.
Yeah, of course. And how do you feel now about the embryo?
Yeah. Yeah. I think about it. I think at the moment my focus is on keeping this pregnancy as healthy as possible. And I'll think about perhaps that embryo once this little one is here safely. But yeah, I think there's never, obviously with a frozen embryo transfer, there's never any guarantee. It was right in, obviously in the thick of the COVID lockdown. I did think that there are people who the appointments were so backlogged at fertility centres. Yeah. And I was like, you know, I've got my two if I can try naturally. So there's a bit of that going on in my head as well. So, yeah, it's a funny one, I think.
Never say never.
Never say never. And I know there are loads of people with the same who have gone through fertility treatment who have frozen embryos who are left with the same dilemmas.
Yeah, my two girlfriends actually, who are gay, they've been together for about 14 years. They have a little girl, and they went to Denmark to get their sperm, and Lucy was the carrier, and they have three embryos from the same sperm, and they're trying to do number two at the moment because of lockdown. It's been so difficult to go back and forth. But I often talk to Lucy about it, and she just, you know, those embryos are there, kind of in Denmark, and she's like, that's potentially my child and I can't get to it. It makes me feel really emotional thinking about it, because it's such a huge thing, such a huge monumental moment in your life that's potentially a little human. I don't know, so she's trying again.
When I went back to my fertility clinic for a different appointment, this was a few years back, I asked if I could see where the embryo was, because I couldn't visualize. It was like, it's frozen, but what, how, where, where's it kept? And basically it was this huge cylinder that was on the floor, and they took the lid off and this like dry ice came out, and there's all these little tubes, you know, all these kind of thin sticks, and it just said Judd with like a number, you know, and they pulled it up, and you know, it was just like, put it back, you know.
Keep it safe,
don't drop it, don't drop
it. It's just mind-blowing, all these little, you know, little frozen embryos. But I mean, Harry was really practical when we were talking about it, and that helped. He was able to kind of slightly separate the emotion from it, and we really, really talked it over and over and over, which I'm grateful to him as ever. He's like a rock of support.
That's amazing. Yeah. That's amazing. I feel like we could just chat all day, but we can't, because you've got to get on with your life. And so have we. But thank you so much. I feel like you need to write a book about it, actually, about your periods.
Well, yeah, we'll see. I mean,
that's an exclusive, right there.
Just starting to feel able to open up about it.
Yeah. I think loads of people look, and anybody listening that's experiencing it, do get in touch with us and speak to Izzy directly, because it's probably more common than we think it is.
Absolutely. Like with everything, and you know, until someone starts talking about it, no one talks about it, and that's the worst thing you can do. So thank you so much for sharing.
Oh, thank you for chatting. It's so lovely. I'm sorry we're not all in the same room, but maybe one day.
If we were, we would be drunk and you wouldn't be.
Well, you might be.
We would. Yeah, Izzy wouldn't.
No.
lovely to chat. We'll see you soon, hopefully.
So much love. Thank you, girls.
She's a superstar, isn't she? Because she's so honest and real. And that's what and that's what we love. That the only way to kind of really delve into these subjects, like you said, George, is to have proper conversations about them. And period history, you know, just the whole sort of secrecy around periods. Like we've mentioned this before, but even just about the whole like tampon thing, when it like falls on the floor, you're like, oh shit, there's a tampon on the floor.
You put it up your sleeve. What is that about?
Yeah.
Also, do you know what? Like even just her mentioning like the whole, you know, over-exercising, under-eating, but being a healthy weight. So no one would think it was alarming because, you know, you appear to look fine. It just sparked, you know, like something I'd completely forgotten about, however, 6 years ago or whatever, 6-7 years ago, that happened to me. And I didn't even think of it like that. I just changed my exercising and my period stopped. And I didn't really think about the impact or the damage that was having on like such an important part of my body. And this is probably happening to so many people, and they're not putting two and two together, because like Izzy was saying, she was a normal weight, so you would just be thinking it was, you know, it's fine, I'm just exercising and I'm eating, you know, in a maybe a slightly restrictive way, but nothing crazy. It's worrying. It's actually really, really worrying.
Yeah, I find it really fascinating, the mentality behind the moments in our life where we suddenly get that wake-up call. And it's happening to me at the moment with my HRT, that I've actually been living with like chronic headaches and fatigue for the last 3 months, thinking that everything's okay, you know, taking my pill every day, not really sure if the dose is right because they've doubled it. And I'm like, no, something's not right here. My headaches are really bad. I've got no energy. I'm finding things quite difficult. So I've made a decision to, well, spoke to my doctor, but also to get in touch with like the menopause doctor to try and have a conversation with her around it, just to see if there's something going on here, like have some more bloods taken. But it's taken me this long of feeling a bit crap to actually do something about it. And some people go years without addressing any sort of period health or anything like that. We need to listen to our bodies a bit more, I think.
We do, and we probably need to get an expert on, actually. Maybe we can do that, you know, over the next couple of months. Someone who you know, can talk about the cycles. Yeah. I thought it was really interesting the way Izzy was talking about at the beginning of your cycle, you can have like a big creativity spike.
Yes.
And then, you know, a couple of weeks later, you can feel a bit like sort of... And we get that, don't we? But we've never thought about it coinciding with our cycles.
Yeah.
I've just thought, I don't know.
Where are you in your cycle at the moment? Is it creative or is it meh?
I've got no idea. After this weekend, I mean, any creative spike would just be completely squashed.
Well, listen, thank you as always for supporting the podcast, for listening every single week, and for kind of spreading the Made by Mama's word as well. As always, we would love you to rate, review, subscribe or follow the podcast.
Yeah, and please do keep your suggestions coming. Like, we cannot thank you guys enough for, you know, all of your support over the last few years. And so this podcast is just as much for you guys as it is for us. So anyone you want to see, please drop us a message. We're on @MadeByMamas or on Zoe's own channel @ZoeHardman. And we'll be back on Friday.
See you then.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.